All right, we might get started. Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Bevan Dam from EY. I'll be chairing this session for Ivan. Ivan's going to be talking to the new employer incentive scheme for Return to Work South Australia. So Ivan's the scheme actuary of Return to Work South Australia. He's got 10 years of experience in workers' compensation. He's got diverse expertise in areas such as reserving, claims agent performance assessment and premium ratings. And his main interest lies in developing business solutions by using actuarial and data analytics techniques. So once we go through the presentation, there'll be time for questions. The sessions are being recorded, so I'll ask if you could put your questions into the microphone so that gets recorded, and I'll have you out of here at 11:40. So over to you, Ivan. Thanks very much.
Thanks for the introduction, Bevan. So what I'll talk today is the result of about a year full of worth of work, subject that's very close to my heart. Before starting, I really would like to acknowledge members of the team who participated in this project. Karen Founders, Lee Hayford, Sally Fox, Rob Cordiner, Michael Francis, and our CEO, Greg McCarthy. It was really a team effort to put the whole incentive scheme together, the whole package. So the overview, I'll spend about half of the talk talking about the, sort of the general issues of designing experience rating schemes. I personally found that when I was doing this project, there were some interesting insights and learnings that I developed through the process, and I thought it would be worthwhile sharing it with the rest of the actuarial community. And then we will go to discuss the actual, you know, the scheme per se. And then I'll talk about practical implications of the new scheme, the costing, sort of how we apply it in practice, just kind of general matters. So let's start from the general overview, the key issues. And when we design a scheme, the important question to ask oneself is, why do we want to do it? What do we want to achieve? And this is my take of what commonly the objectives would be. So first and foremost, we really want to encourage the right behavior. We want employers to prevent injuries and invest in occupational health and safety measures, and we want once a claim happens, we want them to be supportive of injured workers. The second driver comes from employers themselves. Those who don't have claims, they think it's fair that their premiums would be lower than for those that do have claims. So, of course, the scheme, any scheme has to be fundamentally fair. So we don't rob Peter to pay Paul. It has to be all balanced. And then, interestingly, a third point, which the more I worked with, was involved with it, the more important, the more I realized how important it is perceived fairness of the scheme. Not only the scheme needs to be fair kind of fundamentally, sort of mathematically, people need to think that it's fair. And a good example is of a very trivial of a scheme that's mathematically is hunky-dory, but wouldn't be fair, perceived as fair. Say, if you give a no-claims bonus to small employers, say 10% in a year where they have no claims, roughly the chance of having a claim is about 1% per year per person. So an office of business with 10 people will have one claim about every 10 years, in rough numbers. So say with 10% discount over 10 years, we under-collect a full premium. So to make ends meet, in a year when there is a claim, we have to charge double the premium. And, of course, that's mathematically it's perfectly fair, but good luck selling it to the employer communities. No one would like it, of course. They'll see it as a complete robbery. You know, why for a trivial claim we have to double the premium? So when designing schemes, we have to be very mindful of these things, of how people see it from the outside. And then the last two are trivial. It has to have low admin costs, and simplicity is a very important consideration. So talking about behavior, now, realistically, there are only three things we can look at in terms of performance assessment of employers: number of claims, costs of claims, and some sort of return to work rate. I put it generically, you can be creative with formulas, but some sort of ratio of outcomes to exposure. So we put them in, we kind of measure something, and then what we want to drive is to drive the right behavior. What you can, obviously, you know, there are many ways to achieve the same financial outcome for an employer. So what we're trying to is prompt employers, influence them to prevent injuries and be supportive to their injured workers. But then there are many other things that they can do and will do that we really don't want to see. And they can suppress claims, just not report them. They can hide claims costs. And sometimes, quite legitimately, in South Australia, we have an employer reimbursement system. About half of injured workers get paid through employer reimbursement. So the employer keeps paying the salary and then claims reimbursement from us. So it's their right to claim or not to claim. So they can hide costs without violating any laws. Can argue if case estimates are part of the experience rating system, there are always arguments about future costs because it's subjective. And then is any return to work rate involved? You can always game a formula. It's a generic actuarial term. You can kind of play with the numerator, denominator, to bend it to your advantage. So it's something we really don't want to happen. So if you think of what can we do about it? I mean, it's fact of life. What can we do about it? So this is my kind of list of suggestions, which we can discuss later, if people have other views. So non-reporting of claims, I really think the only solution is don't use claim numbers or claim frequency as a KPI in the experience assessment. Because the minute you start using claims, people will start suppressing them. There are other reasons why claim count's not a good KPI, but that's probably enough. For hiding of claims costs, really the important thing is we can't exclude claim costs from the experience rating, but what we can do is design a system in such a way that there is no advantage to employer in hiding the costs. If we do that, then you know at least you know people. It's more likely that they'll do the right thing. Arguing about case estimates is probably nothing can be done. In my view, the only way is to try to exclude future costs from the experience rating altogether, because the minute you do, you're into case estimates, and then the whole raft of trouble starts. And gaming the return to work rate formula, again, I think the only way out of it is just not to use formula-driven return to work rates, because any formula can be manipulated. So out of all of this, what I'll do now is spend some time talking about the second point, hiding of claim costs and how we can deal with it. And that was one of the kind of revelations and insights I developed through working on this project. So the term that I coined when I was working and thinking and presenting it to our senior management, the term leverage, and the leverage occurs when the premium costs more than the claim, and it's really a big problem in my view. Firstly, it's a typical perceived unfairness. Employers are really not happy. Why? They kind of know how much a claim cost or would have cost, and it's impossible to explain to them why the premium costs more than the claim that had led to the increase in their premium. And then, of course, it stimulates cost hiding. And that is also a problem for two reasons. Financially, if employers hide costs, then you would think it's okay. Well, they're paying for it anyway, so it's cheaper for the scheme. But if you price the scheme on the fact that for every dollar in claims you will collect three from the employer, and that three had funded their discount, and instead of three you collected only one, you're in the red. So there are some financial implications from the scheme. And from the case management point of view, it leads to unreported, late reported claims. All your early intervention strategies start to slip. So really not a good thing. So as an example, leverage, it's pretty much any scheme where you have a base rate and you modify it through some sort of percentage loading, will lead to circumstances where a small penalty applied to a huge wage roll gives a large cost for a trivial claim. And as an example of that, I just want to show you how this worked in our old system and why it was a problem. So this is our experience rating formula we had for 3 years. So the way this, it looks a bit complex. It's actually quite simple. So the premium is wages times industry rate, and then this 1 minus sizing factor, and again 1 minus ECCR employer's claim cost rate divided by ICCR industry claim cost rate. So the way this works, if an employer has no claims, employer claim cost ratio is zero, you have 1 minus sizing factor. So they get a discount equal to the sizing factor. So for a large employer, it may be 50%, they get a 50% discount. If their claims costs are, say, for the sake of the argument, double of the industry ICCR, the industry ratio, then the expression in that bracket is minus 1, so they get a penalty equal to, you know, plus sizing factor. So mathematically it balances out very nicely, and it's perfectly fair from the mathematical point of view. But what's interesting is that if you take the derivative of that, if we look at what's the marginal increase of premium per dollar increase in claims cost, then you will find, I'll just show, this is the industry rates, and you will notice the ratios of rates to ICCR is about 5, and there is a reason for it. So if you take the derivative, you will see the formula is sizing factor times industry rate divided by ICCR, and that ratio, industry rate by industry claim cost ratio, is about 5. The reason it's always greater than 1 is because industry rates have loading for expenses. They're based on ultimate incurred costs. It's always a number more than 1, more likely about in the 3 to 5 sort of range. And then you will see this is the graph of our sizing factors. So like for, say, $1 million employer, sizing factor is about 0.6 times 5, it's a factor of 3 increase. So just through the sheer maths, we can see that a large employer will pay 3 times more in extra premium than the cost of claims. And you can imagine all sorts of frustrations and untoward behavior that this balance creates. So we will move on now and look at the actual premium system that we have developed. So the objectives for it were similar to what I had before. It had to be simple, fair, targeted, focus on return to work, cover employers of all sizes. The old one, only there was an entry sort of barrier. And then we absolutely didn't want to use any case estimates because they're just a pain for everyone involved. So going back to fairness, one of the things, we had several workshops with employers, and so we found that talking to them and listening to their feedback, we could encapsulate fairness in a few key dot points. The first one, I would say that they really want to see the dollar impact on their premium. They want transparency. They want simplicity. They want to understand where the cost is coming from. And they absolutely hate leverage. They don't want premium impact to be more than the cost of claims that had caused that increase. Secondly, they want to see the link between what they can do and the premium they receive. And fair enough, you can argue, you know, if you had prevented that injury, then you wouldn't have to pay, you know, in the first place. That's not a very good argument for doesn't go very well with the employer community. We're insurer, after all, you know, things happen. And once an injury occurred, you know, how can an employer reduce the cost? So we wanted employers like systems, they see them as fair in circumstances where that link is clear to them. They can be translated into concrete action. And then the final one, there is a balance between risk and reward. And this one point came up when we were kind of fixing the old system, and one of the things employers complained the most was that the maximum premium cap started at 1.5 times on the base premium. So what happened is a small employer with 10% sizing factor has a large claim, which happens, and all of a sudden their premium goes to increases by 50%. And they didn't like it, I think rightly so. And when we were thinking of how to fix it, Lee Hayford from the team who I acknowledge came up with this idea: why don't we balance it so that the maximum penalty is always twice the maximum reward? And two is a good round number. And when we floated the idea with the employees, they really liked it. The feedback back was very good. It feels fair. Feels fair. So we changed that formula so that the maximum cap was twice the maximum discount. And then we carried on forward that, retained that principle in the new system. So take my word for it that employers like that sort of balance where maximum penalty and maximum reward are sort of in 1-to-2 relationship. So the idea of the new scheme came to me when I was toing and froing, you know, looking at different possibilities, and it goes back to a very basic principle or idea in insurance, the idea of excess. And you know from everyday life, you insure your car, you can choose to pay a high premium with little excess or a low premium with high excess. And, of course, excess stimulates your careful driving because you share, you retain some of the risk. So we really took that idea and planted it in the workers' comp ground. And the way the system works is every employer, we start from the base premium, which is in industry rated, and then employers are given an outright discount that depends on their size. And to that discount, we then add income support costs that were paid the year before. So anything that's paid this year will be added to your premium the next year. But as because we're an insurer, that additional income support cost is capped from the top. So we never go above more than by more than twice the discount. So within, you can see that red cost will fill up the box all the way to the top, but once it's there, that's it. So employer's exposure, their maximum benefit is the discount they get, and their maximum loss is twice the discount they receive. And the size of the discount factor depends on employers. Small employers get small discounts, and large employers get larger discount factors. The reason it has to be graduated, sort of graded in that manner, comes back sort of to equity. If you give a very large discount factor to small employers, they'll clean up because they hardly ever have claims, and we will have to pay too much for them. So it needs to be to align with the likely size of the retained costs we'll get from these employer groups. So the retained cost is, there are rules about it, so we include income support paid the year before. So if we're doing it for, say, 2015-16, it's costs paid in 2014-15. And they're paid for claims incurred in the previous 3 years. So again, it's kind of depicted here in the actuarial runoff triangle. If we go to next year, the retained cost will be as shown, and then the year later, It's one more line. Why is it 3 years? Because we're effectively a three-year capped scheme. So in 3 years, the cost of the scheme will, or the cost of each claim will have completely run out, except for serious injuries, which are kind of not in scope of this anyway. So that over time, every claim is every year every cost is included. Just to give an example of how this thing works, some numbers there. So say we have a $400,000 employer, has it just by size through the table, has a 20% discount, which is $80,000. So for year 15-16, that employer would have had a $80,000 discount and had a retained cost of $56,000. So the premium would be $376,000. So more than less than the industry rated. And then say for the sake of the argument, next year there was a bad one. They had higher retained costs, so they'd pay more. They'd pay $448,000. Now, so let's go back to our questions. Does the scheme motivate the desired behavior, and where are the problems? Well, firstly, if there are no claims, obviously there's no cost. So in that sense, it's a strong incentive to prevent injuries. If you don't have any injuries this year, you won't have to pay income, you know, to pay extra premium next year. Now, if there is a claim, which happens, then employer can minimize the costs by either facilitating full return to work, in which case, you know, just the costs stop, or also partial return to work. So the more their duties, the more hours they can offer to the injured worker, the less they will have to pay in premium next year. So there's this very direct link from actions to financial outcomes. And then the leverage that I went through great lengths explaining what it is and why it is a problem. It's not a problem here because it's one-to-one. If they choose not to retain costs, then, well, they retain the costs, we don't pay them. If employers kind of transfer, don't retain the costs, don't hide the costs, we pay them, then that's fine, but we will recover them next year from the employer. So it's absolutely one-to-one relationship. And then finally, there are no case estimates to worry about. So talk about the new scheme cost. So it's not a zero net cost scheme. In contrast to the old experience rating, which balanced to zero, this one actually does have a net cost. And in rough numbers, the premium discounts are worth about $80 million, and the what we collect in retained cost is about $40 million, which leaves us $40 million short. And we recover them by loading the industry rates by 10%. So our published average premium rate for the scheme is 1.95 for this year. So what we do, I load in 2.15 into industry rate. So in the end, I aim to collect that much, and then the difference will be returned to employers in the form of discounts. So, just one of the practical aspects of any experience scheme is how do you manage it? How does it interact with the annual rates review? And for the old scheme, there was a big challenge every year. To publish industry claim cost ratios, ICCRs, for next year, because they're a benchmark. We need to make sure that once we take yet unknown future costs of claims for employers in the next year, divide them by ICCRs that we publish now, apply the formula, we'll collect the right amount of premium. It's a very challenging exercise to go through, and there is a high risk of, moderate risk of not getting it right and either over-collecting or under-collecting. It's not good either way. So this, in contrast, that scheme is much easier to kind of manage actuarially because the only thing we need to do is put a margin on the on industry rates to cover the cost of the scheme. So this 2.15 instead of 1.95. But it's quite easily predictable. Realistically, we set the rates in late October, early May. By that time, costs for the year that's kind of during which it's all happening, but three quarters are paid out anyway. The rest is actually you can predict quite reliably. And then that allows you to work out the net cost of the scheme. So it's very easy to manage financially. Then let's go back to the question of fairness. I found it an interesting one, and until I resolved it to myself, I was a bit uneasy about the whole scheme. And if you think about it, are we duping employers? Because it's like, you know, a clearance sale in a department store when they jack up prices and then put clearance stickers on them. Does it work that way here or not? So we increased, everyone pays 10% more through the industry rates, but then small employers only get 5% discount at the most if they don't have claims. So is that, how does that fly? So the way to look at it is to consider loss ratios. So really we have two scenarios. One is where there is no incentive scheme and everyone pays the industry rate, that's the blue line. And you can see the loss ratios. Small employers always cost us more than large employers. So without any experience rating in the scheme, large employers subsidize small employers. If we go with the second scenario, what's happening now, so we charge 2.15 but implement the experience rating, you can see the loss ratio line flattens out. So it is actually, it's perfectly fair to do that. And in actual fact, the incentive scheme, if anything, it improves the burden of premium distribution between different employer groups in the scheme. So it's if anything, it's good. Now I'll finish with conclusions. So when we, it's really just coming back to our original objectives. Did we meet them? So the first one was simplicity, and most definitely our premiums people were, I would say, fascinated by the fact that we hardly had any calls at all. So we introduced a new system, and there were no phone calls. It was clear, people were happy, there was a non-issue. Fairness, well, employee feedback is very positive. That's the only thing I say. I've done my bit doing the actuarial sort of fairness review, and I'm happy that it works. Employees are not complaining. That's the best that I can say. The return to work focus, look, want to have a lower premium. The only way to do it is to re-employ the injured workers. The sooner you do it, the lower the premium, the better for everyone. And then the last two objectives, small employers, yes, we do, everyone's in, and no case estimates, yes, no bloody case estimates. So, well, that concludes it. If you have any questions, please feel free.
So we've got about 10 minutes for questions, so I'm happy to take questions from the floor. I've got a few, however.
Ivan, just one question. On with the small employers, obviously they're not getting such a big discount now on their premium, and with a small employer's premium base makes quite a big difference to their bottom line. How have you sort of approached that with some of the smallers in their business sense, where maybe they feel that they're not getting as big a discount as perhaps they would see or they would need in a profitable business?
Could you repeat it again?
So if you're a small employer and you have a small wage role, then that discount that perhaps you could get from having no claims would actually be straight to your bottom line. So whereas the big employer wouldn't notice an increase or a deduction quite in the same way as a small employer would. So how have you broached that with the small employees where they're ultimately not getting the big discounts perhaps that they might need?
Yeah, look. I think we need to realize that claims are a very infrequent event. So you know, how small is a small employer? Say, $10,000. We're talking about base premium, say a $10,000 employer is probably what you would classify as small. Well, does $1,000, say, you know, they get a 5% discount, so $500. Does it make it or break it in their accounts? I don't think so. And considering they have one claim about every 10 years, realistically there's nothing they can do or need to do to prevent. It's such an infrequent event when you aggregate, when you look at all employers in the scheme as an ensemble, of course some of them have claims, and that claims cost us quite a lot of money because small employers don't have the, you know, the return to work support, all these things. You can see that through the loss ratios. But if you then, if you're just one of these employers who has claims every 10 years, they probably don't even think about it. It's a non-issue for them. Now, I actually did have a question from one of kind of medium-sized employers asking, you know, how come we don't get a 30% discount? You know, we didn't have claims for the past 5 years. How come we are only getting 5 or 10% discount our premium? I replied to them that, look, you know, statistically you're not supposed to have claims because, you know, for all employers in the scheme, the return period, I don't know, is 15 years. And if we were giving you discounts, we would have to fund this from somewhere else. And they were completely satisfied with the answer. They said, you know, thank you for a clear explanation. So I think it kind of, it works. Andrew has a question.
Oh, it's okay. Andrew can go next.
Okay, sorry. Amanda Aitken from Actuarial Edge. This sort of follows on from Richard's question. It sounds like quite a big change, not just for small employers, but for medium and large employers as well. And you said that you had some discussions with individual employers who might have had questions. Do you have any tips about the broader sort of communication strategy that you employed in trying to make employers as a large group feel comfortable about the changes that you were proposing?
Look, we had several workshops with them. Firstly, to put it in perspective, they absolutely hated the old system, the majority of them, because they found it was too volatile. You know, the premium swung too much from year to year. They didn't like case estimates and all the issues. The employers felt them very. They were very vocal about them. And we had several workshops with them. I personally took part, I think, in three, and Greg and Rob Cousin, the general manager for insurance operations, they had more. So they were kind of round tables and discussions. When we floated that idea with the employers, they were just happy. They were so sick and tired of a complex formula and case estimates and ICCRs that they don't understand. A classic question was, there's sometimes a small state, so you can have a industry code with just one employer. And then one employer comes to you, how come I pay a penalty? I am the industry. You're racing me against the industry, and I'm paying a penalty this year. Yeah, good luck explaining that. You can explain it. You know, mathematically it all works, but so at the human personal, it's you can't sell it as fair. So the take up for this model was very good. So we really didn't have any resistance at all. The only thing difficulty we had. Was that under the old system, some of the employers received very large discounts. So, I don't know, I can go back to the graph. Say $1 million employer has a 60% discount factor. So if for whatever reason they didn't have claims, they would get a 60% discount on their standard premium rate. And under the new system, the best we can do is 30. So we managed that transition. Somehow there was some kind of no disadvantage test for the transitional year. So it was a lot of actuarial work to do all of that. But as far as I know from the premiums team, it was pretty smooth sailing in dealing with the employers.
Andrew, do you want to come down to the microphone?
G'day, Ivan. Andrew Doman from Hanover Re. Firstly, thank you for the presentation. It's very interesting and quite good. Just wanted to ask you a question about the three-year thing. I believe in the New South Wales scheme they had this issue at some point that employers started pushing their claims into later, paying them later, as a bit of a behavioural issue. How would you sort of try and account or fix that problem or stop that kind of behaviour?
Yeah, look, we're a three-year scheme. You know, it's really the new system is tailored to the new legislation in many ways. Because we're a capped scheme, so the income support entitlements, they only go for 2 years unless you're seriously injured, and then two years from injury date. So in terms of development years, you know, you need to include a third year for the runoff. So there's nothing an employer can do, really, because a worker will just, you know, the entitlements will stop anyway.
Thanks.
Hello, I'm Andrew Holtram from Taylor Fry. First of all, thanks for the presentation. I thought it was a great example of being able to take into account the particular features of the scheme and seize the opportunities that are there with the particular benefit structure. Exactly, I guess the answer to the point to the previous question. I thought that was good. One thing I wonder though is, and I wonder whether the criticism is fair, is the situation that you're dealing with at the moment is that most employers would have received a very heavy premium reduction this year in comparison to the premium that they've had in previous years by virtue of the changes that have occurred in the scheme. And I wonder whether the acceptance for the new regime is actually a function of the good news that came in the actual premium rate. And I wonder whether the real test for whether or not this works is coming when employers start to see the degree of change in premium rates from 1 year to the next in an environment where you're not getting that one-off kick from the benefit changes?
Yeah, look, good question, kind of right on the mark. Of course, we had to seize the opportunity, you know, when the average premium rate dropped by 28%, I think, from 2.75 to down to 2. That was the perfect the only opportunity to introduce this, and that really smoothed the impact for, you know, employers with huge, large maximum discounts on under the old system. The net impact was, you know, manageable for us. To introduce a new system like that without a major change in the average premium rate would have been much harder, if not impossible. So, again, we capitalized on what we had available. It actually meant that we had to work very hard to make this happen because we kind of realized at some stages either now or never, and that, you know, brought forward the deadlines and had to move quite fast with all of this. With going forward, look, future will tell. I can't tell you. But considering the volatility they had under the old system, I don't think it'll be worse.
So we've probably got time for one more question if there is one.
Hi, Sharon Stratford. I'm not an actuary, so it's good you don't have formulas in there. One of the things that I did like was all your engagement and your consultation with employers, and I like the concept, just from listening to a number of employers over the years and what they dislike about premium formulas, that you had a discount first. So kind of everyone gets a discount, so everyone would be happy, even though it would go up, at least they could see it. So I was wondering, with that employer feedback, and early on in your presentation you talked about, I guess because of the gaming behaviour, not putting some things into the formula, like a claims frequency or return to work rate. So I just wondered what the feedback when you were talking to all these employers was on putting return to work rate into the formula. Obviously, you discounted because of the gaming that might happen, but what did employers think about it, and is it something you'd ever think about?
Look, to be honest, we didn't even consider it because it inevitably brings in that, you know, it's all, everything's related. So the minute you put a formula like return to work and apply it to a standard rate, you go to the problem of leverage, that all of a sudden the disproportionate impact of claims costs on premiums. And this is something I was absolutely determined to just eradicate, not to have it at all. And once you take that stance, you're very limited in what you can do. Effectively, kind of draw, it's probably the only scheme that that allows you to do that. You can play with discount factors, but the main design is, I can't think of anything else that would do it.
All right. Well, thanks very much for your questions, and please thank Ivan once again.
Thank you.